This is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is with us today. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. So if you have questions about nutrition, give us a call and talk to Susan. Here are the numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes and the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness, and she is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. Questions about diet and nutrition? Give us a call. The phone number's 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and 800-222-WILL. Good to see you. Welcome back.
Good to see you.
Lovely day out there,
isn't it? It is lovely and warm. It's wonderful.
Yeah, okay. Well, we've got a listener all ready to go. Let's take this call now on line one. Good afternoon. Where are you calling from today?
Champaign.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any relationship, just a question. In terms of blood platelets, mine's always been somewhat low. For some reason, they become somewhat lower. Is there any relationship of that with nutrition and or exercise? Do you know?
Well, it's a good question. There certainly are changes that can happen with, total blood cell count, with exercise, in total nutrition, but generally if your platelets are low, that may be a factor of just genetically they're low. I can think of something kind of related, but this is a little bit different, but often certain foods may act more as blood thinners, and so then you have to be more aware of them if your platelet count is low. You know, things like garlic, for example, or fish oil or things like that can actually serve as blood thinners or enhance thinning of the blood. So people sometimes have to be more aware of those foods if their platelet count is off. But I'm not aware particularly, let's say, of certain things you would eat that would change that or, affect that necessarily. We always think of, eating more red meat keeps the blood strong and things like that. But a lot of that is related to iron because of the increased iron. So it's not necessarily related to the blood platelets.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you'd like to talk to Susan Kundrat, registered dietitian. Anywhere else, 800-222-9455. Well, one of the things that you suggested we talk about this afternoon while we're waiting for listeners to call in is diet and cancer prevention.
Right. We've been seeing a lot about breast cancer prevention, certainly this month for October, and it does make you think about, well, what are the things we can do nutrition-wise, hopefully to decrease our risk of getting cancer or to also, after if someone has gone through treatment for cancer, how should they eat after that? And it's kind of like, it's divided into certain periods. Certainly what you eat for prevention is very similar. It's basically the same type of plan of what you'd eat to hopefully prevent another incidence of cancer. During treatment, before, during, and after treatment, it's very different because a lot of those times you need to get enough calories, enough energy, and the diet is different. But if we think about the recommendations, there were new national recommendations that came out last year in 2007, and I can just run through those because obviously some of it is related to diet.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is certainly related to your weight maintenance and related activity and those kinds of things. And so the goals of this expert report, partly funded by AICR, American Institute for Cancer Research, which has a lot of good information on their website too. First one is be as lean as possible without becoming overweight. So that's a tricky one, be as lean as possible. But we do know in some studies, particularly women, postmenopausal women, when they've gained weight during that postmenopausal time, there's some concern about that increasing the risk, particularly of breast cancer. So trying to maintain weight, this is a challenge because, of course, for a lot of women, once you go through menopause, sometimes it's more difficult to maintain the proper weight because our weight tends to go up with changes in metabolism and changes in lean body mass. And so that's where exercise becomes probably even more important. So that's one. Being physically active for at least 30 minutes every day. And really, that's not too difficult for most people to do. And we always say things like park your car far away and those kinds of things. And what I encourage people to do and my clients to do is just to try to get 2 15-minute spots of activity daily and start with that. And obviously, if you can do more, that's great. But at least try to get your body active. You know, there are certain things that happen, and we don't even know all the things that happen when you move your body. And we know that affects blood sugars. We know that certainly affects lipid levels and just keeps the body healthier by being active. So whatever you can do, do it. Maybe it's getting up and down out of a chair a few more times. You know, whatever you're able to do, I think that's helpful. Next one is avoiding sugary drinks. Limit consumption of high-energy foods or energy-dense foods. We can talk more about that. But foods high in sugar, high in fat, eating more of a variety of vegetables, fruits, whole grains, and legumes such as beans. There have been some studies on beans and peas and lentils and their benefit. Limiting consumption of red meats. And in this latest report, there was more emphasis on avoiding processed meats. And so things like bologna and hot dogs and those kinds of mm-hmm. things to really try to avoid those as much as possible. If consumed at all, limit alcoholic drinks to 2 a day for men, 1 a day for women. So that'd be a regular size beer. It wouldn't be a 40-ounce beer, but it would be more like a 12-ounce beer or a glass of wine or a shot. And then a couple other things, limiting consumption of salty and processed foods. And the last recommendation on this cancer prevention was not to use supplements to protect against cancer. In other words, there are a lot of supplements out there that are being marketed as preventing cancer, decreasing your risk of cancer. And we do know that fruits and vegetables and whole grains and these nutrients that come from those foods are important, but we don't know that there's a certain supplement you can take to prevent cancer. And so just to be wary of that.
Okay, very good. Well, let's come back to where we live in our lives, and then mm-hmm. that's, you know, in our homes, in our cars, in our offices. So let's go to the kitchen, and what might we open up the pantry and say, what do we got in there? What could we add to the mix that would be good for us? Let's go on a positive step forward here.
Sure. Well, there are a few simple things to do. I think the first step should be to increase produce. Because when we look at trying to, let's say, limit saturated fat, and that wasn't one of these specific guidelines, but that's one of our recommendations as well, and trying to increase fiber, which is one of our recommendations, one of the easiest places is to increase produce. And so we all know we need to eat more produce. And the question now is to how to do it. So one simple strategy is to make a shopping list of not only fresh fruits and vegetables, but you have fresh, frozen, canned, and dried. And get a minimum of 2 or 3 things from each of those groups. So, for example, maybe you are getting apples and strawberries and grapes, and you've got lots of different colors there, so that's great. But you're also going to get canned peaches and canned pears and frozen strawberries and frozen blueberries and maybe dried cranberries. And so when you come home, you have a lot of options. So that's number one, I think, is making sure there are several options for produce. The second one, then, is packaging them so that you'll eat them. And so, you know, a good thing that we like to say as registered dietitians is keep the food in plain sight that's healthy. So, for example, having a fruit bowl out. I was just working with a coach last week at one of the schools I work with, and she had a big fruit bowl in her office filled with oranges and apples. And so when her team comes in, they grab a piece of fruit, and she had nuts there and things. And so it's actually a great way to do it because it's in plain sight. So that's number two. Simple things like putting grapes in little containers or baggies, or making sure that an apple is sliced for the day. Just slice it and put a little orange juice over it and mix that over it, and it'll stay to where it doesn't get brown all day because that'll stop the oxidation mm-hmm. of the apple. So we'll tend to eat it if we bring it. If I bring a sliced apple to work, I always eat it. If I bring one that's not sliced, I don't always eat it. And so making things may be a little easier that way too. And I've started with my clients to try to help them figure out, just strategize during the day when they're going to have different types of food groups. So, for example, it's pretty easy to have fruit at breakfast, pretty easy to have fruit for snacks and fruit at lunch. So maybe those are the goals of getting 3 or 4 fruits. And at night, that might be the vegetable time. It might be that there's not even much grain at the meal, but you're having a big salad, you're having a big thing mm-hmm. of steamed broccoli. and for a snack, maybe you're having carrots and hummus later, and so you just say from 4 or 5 o'clock on, I'm really going to try to boost my veggies, and beforehand I'm going to try to boost.
Okay, we're back.
Okay.
That's a little emergency alert system test, I do believe. And so we had no idea that that was coming up today. So we'll just move on.
Okay, we're in good shape.
Okay, we're back with veggies in the evening.
Veggies in the evening. But figure out what works best for you, because like you say, that's the next thing, is seeing these guidelines. Now, how do we actually eat more of the things that are beneficial for us? And there are other things you can do that are easy. One of the pieces of information I brought today is from Diana Dyer. Diana Dyer is a registered dietitian. Her website is cancerrd.com, cancerrd.com. She's a three-time cancer survivor. She's been here in our community in Champaign-Urbana to speak a few times. And she is very well known for her work with diet and cancer. And having her own experience, changing her diet and going through, trying to always weed through the research and figuring out what to do. And she's done a great job of actually putting this information out in books and also on her website. And some of the things she does, I just brought kind of some ideas for people to be thinking about. These are things that she tries to get in every day because she really feels like they're very important. Things like whole soy foods. And there have been a lot of studies on whole soy, not necessarily using soy supplements or powders, but actually
Tofu and edamame. There
right.
you go.
Tofu, edamame, miso, tempeh, using different products that are actually pretty easy. Even having a glass of soy milk a day may be beneficial. Using things like the beans and legumes, and she tries every day to have at least one serving of beans or legumes. So that might be simple for most people, saying, well, maybe they wouldn't soak the beans, but they would have them if they were canned. So it might be a case where you buy canned beans or even low-sodium canned beans. You actually take them out of the can, you rinse them, and you put them in a container in your fridge so that when you have a salad, you just scoop out a half cup of canned beans, and then you've got that on your salad. So that makes it really easy to take with you. Things like having whole grain products. We've talked about that a lot, choosing whole grain products. Well, the first step I would do is when you go buy cereal at the store, I'd look for at least 3 grams of fiber per serving, which many cereals have. And I'd buy whole wheat bread instead of white bread. And there are two things that would be very easy and simple. And we think these whole grains are much better for us and may help prevent certain cancers as well. So I think there are simple things that we can do, but I would say on top of everything would be eating more produce and trying to make sure when you get the produce, then you wash it well. And, you know, you may prefer to buy organic produce, and particularly when it's in season, it may be a good time to do that, particularly those that pesticides tend to get in the skin more. You know, things like grapes, for example, or apples would be a good thing to buy organic if you had that choice. And so sometimes in the store I'll notice that the prices are similar and sometimes they're not very close. So that's, you know, it's always beneficial to eat more of the fruits and vegetables, but you do want to wash them well. You do want to make sure that you're not, you know, eating them without trying to get some of that off of there.
I took a look at her website and I found a recipe that was really interesting in her blog area.
Yes.
And this is something, I think this might be a way to get resistant vegetable eaters to eat some more vegetables. She makes kale chips. She takes the kale and she cuts it up, and then she puts a little bit of red wine vinegar and a little bit of olive oil, 1 tablespoon of each, and some dried herbs, and she mixes that up. She puts it out on a baking sheet. She puts it in the oven at 350.
Okay.
She turns them after 10 minutes, and they're in the oven for about 20 to 30 minutes total, and she says they just disappear.
Yeah.
So we'll have the website and her name again
that's
later
great.
In the program. But I thought, that sounds great.
Oh, that sounds really good, too, and very easy.
Yeah. So this is the Afternoon Magazine. We're talking about diet and nutrition this afternoon. Our guest is Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. Susan is a sports and wellness nutritionist. She's also an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with your questions about nutrition, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. Let's talk with another listener now, a caller in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
Yeah, you were talking about adding orange juice to apples so they wouldn't turn brown. Well, my concern has been that my apples do not turn brown. Quite a few different varieties, and I can have them, you know, apple slices sitting on a plate for up to an hour, and they're not turning brown. So I'd like to know, what are they doing to the apples these days?
Well, that's a good question. It may be, I mean, typically, if they're exposed to air, then they will oxidize and start turning brown. And some may not as fast as others. There's not much vitamin C in apples themselves, and so they're not high in that, phytochemical or the vitamin C that may help prevent the browning themselves. So I'm not really sure. I have noticed it, like you say, I think I've noticed different varieties will turn brown faster than others. It may also have something to do with the liquid content of the apple. It seems to me that sometimes I'll get a drier apple. Maybe I'll have one that, you know, you get that and it seems mealy and dry, mm-hmm. and boy, those turn brown so fast. And I just had a Honeycrisp apple today, and that's so juicy and hard, and I don't seem like I have trouble with those turning brown as easily. So I don't know. That'd be a good question for a food scientist.
Yeah, but, you know, ever since I can remember, if you were going to prepare apples ahead of time, it was always to put something with a little vitamin C in it, whether mm-hmm. it was orange juice or lemon juice or mm-hmm. something. If you were going to set out to make something and you were going to prepare your apples a little bit ahead of time, I remember from being a kid,
mm-hmm, sure,
you'd put lemon juice. Something on there as well.
Right.
I don't know if the listener is still there.
Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, you know, 5 minutes they turn brown. And, like, you know, Jonathan McIntosh, Jonah Gold. Delicious.
Right.
I mean, we're having a variety here.
It may have something also to do with the temperature at that time as well.
Lots of variables.
Yeah, yeah. But
all I would thank the listener for her call this afternoon and invite others to join us. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free 800-222-9455. Well, maybe we could talk about one of the things that you brought with you today and that we can offer folks as this month's handout is a way to get some more veggies mm-hmm. into your diet. Fast, high-energy smoothies and shakes, and these range in calories from 103 to 465. So if you're having a good workout and you're in shape, well, I guess you can afford that 465.
Yeah.
But a lot of us might want to start it with a light berry smoothie. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about how you come up with these kinds of recipes for smoothies and shakes, and what kind of fruits work in them, and what kind of liquid do you use, and mm-hmm. is there a ratio?
Yeah, good question. Well, one thing I look for is trying to get at least one fruit per smoothie, maybe two. And I think what works really well, my favorite, is probably frozen berries, because berries are something that, at least for most of us, maybe we don't eat as many of those as we normally would, and especially in the winter when they're not very readily available, you can still get all the frozen berries. And now you can find the frozen mixed berries, which work great in these smoothies. But so berries, frozen cherries work really well because they're very high phytochemical content of frozen cherries, frozen peaches, because peaches are another food that we eat them when they're available, but then a lot of people don't eat them canned or they don't eat them other times of year. So those work great. And what I try to do is have then maybe a half cup or a cup of your frozen, fresh or frozen fruit, and at least a half cup of liquid. You're probably going to need at least a half cup of maybe use skim milk or soy milk or juice, or if you're really looking for something low calorie, one thing that works pretty well in some of these basic fruit smoothies, if you don't like milk or soy milk, is to even use something like Crystal Light or Propel or even a little bit of Diet 7-Up or something like
that. Yeah, because some people are going to have to watch their sugars.
Right, right. The calories may be an issue.
Lots of folks. Yeah.
Sure, sure. So as a base, you could always say, well, I'm going to get a half cup to a cup of milk or soy milk, or maybe if you need more calories, maybe you're using ice cream or using frozen yogurt or sorbet or something like that. And then try to get a half cup to a cup of fruit in there. And again, a real simple one that we have here, a half cup of skim milk, or you could use soy milk, or you could use yogurt. This adds a teaspoon of sugar because it's not a sweetened liquid that you're adding. And then a cup of fresh or frozen unsweetened strawberries. or other berries, and then just some ice cubes. And so what that gives you is half a milk serving, and it gives you at least one fruit serving. And that's only about 103 calories, so it's not very high. The good thing about these smoothies, when you add the ice in and you've blend that up, is that the volume is pretty big. Mm-hmm. And so you end up, if you drink this fruit smoothie at night, you're probably going to be satisfied, and that's just a 100-calorie snack. And plus, you're getting a lot of nutrients when you add those berries in there. Another one that I really like that I have on here is one that I call Purple Zoom. And it's got 6 ounces of Concord grape juice. And again, that's caloric. But Concord grape juice is real high in antioxidants. We know it's cardioprotective. Half cup of frozen blueberries. And then a half cup of light vanilla yogurt or kefir. Kefir works great in smoothies. Kefir is more of a pourable yogurt. Mm. And then 2 tablespoons of wheat germ. Wheat germ is real high in monounsaturated fats, very high in fiber, so it's real good for you. And then a half cup of ice. And so that smoothie is 260 calories, but it's also 9 grams of protein, 52 grams of carbs. So again, if you're watching it for blood sugar reasons, you may want to drop that amount down a little bit. But 260 calories for a really good snack is really about the same as 2 or 3 packaged cookies. But boy, do you have a lot that you're drinking there. So it's very different in terms of feeling satisfied.
Okay. Let's take another call now. Listener on line 1 in Champaign. Hi, you're on the air with Susan Kundrat.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. For people who are trying to quit smoking, are there any nutrients that help reduce the addictive qualities of nicotine? And I'll sign off and listen on the radio.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, so that's... You know, if you're quitting smoking, what nutrients may help with that or may help with the addiction? Well, there's some interest in B vitamins. You know, we think of B vitamins kind of as calming vitamins. Now, they're also used in a variety of ways in the body just for energy systems. So possibly B6 may be helpful, although I've never seen definitive data that for sure it does. But theoretically, that may be helpful with that. I think, probably from a standpoint of quitting smoking, the biggest thing is having plenty of healthy foods around that are also going to keep your fingers busy. So that's a whole other issue. But things like baby carrots and sliced apples and these kinds of things that you can eat one by one that really help just more with, not as much with the cravings, but just with what you're used to doing. And so I think from a food standpoint, those things can be helpful. I don't know particularly of any other nutrients. One thing I would say is that smokers in general have a bit higher need for vitamin C. And so not that that's going to necessarily help with the cravings, but I do think if someone's been a smoker, they really want to focus on getting more vitamin C. And that may be, again, if you eat 4, 5, 6 fruits a day, you're going to probably get a lot more vitamin C. So you would naturally get that. And so that might be just a really good strategy when you're trying to quit smoking, is saying, well, could I really up any type of finger type fruits and veggies? Even things like sliced celery and sliced and broccoli in pieces and cauliflower and things like that you would have to pick up one by one. That would be similar to, picking up your cigarette, I think is really, really helpful because those needs are going to be a little bit higher for that vitamin C.
So too. Have that stuff prepped up and ready and with you, I suppose.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Also, I guess it's a matter of, time of day and activity. There's so much tied to what you're doing when.
Right, exactly. And I think when the cravings hit, you have to think, it's just like anything, changing behavior. We always have to think about what we're going to do instead of that when we get that feeling or those cravings. I know it's not that simple because, it's wonderful that you're quitting smoking. That's the most important thing you can do for decreasing your risk of so many things. So that's fantastic. But make it easier for yourself so you have something to grab and something to kind of go to when you're feeling the cravings or when you're feeling like you really need a cigarette to help with that.
Let's take another call. A listener now in Sullivan, line 1. Hello.
Yes, I had a question about drinks for breakfast. Is V8 Fusion, is that a good drink, or is orange juice better, or what would you recommend as far as for breakfast?
Yeah, I like the V8 mixed drinks that they have now, the V8 Fusion and V8 Splash and some of those other ones. The Fusion in particular, it really is a serving of fruit and a serving of vegetables. So that's great because often we don't get vegetables in the morning. So that would be a wonderful thing to have. Typically, cup for cup, they may be a little bit lower in carbs than what you have with just straight orange juice because it does have some vegetable juice in that too. Some of those have some additional sweetener added too, but I think those are great. So that would be good. I think orange juice is always good in that it is naturally so high in vitamin C. It's just a great food. Now, again, it's high in calories, so you have to be aware of that. But, you know, the other thing with the orange juice is you certainly can get some of those that are calcium fortified. So if you don't get 3 or 4 servings of a milk product or other calcium food, you can get that along with your orange juice too, which is another bonus. But I think they would both be great. I think they're both easy. You know, part of the thing that we're looking for here is how do you increase fruits and vegetables in general? And juice is one way that you can do that. But those V8 drinks are really a good option too. There are a lot of other ones that are out there now as well that are mixes of fruits and vegetables. And so I'd look, there's products called Vroot, which is vegetable and fruit mixed. And there are several other ones that you can buy in single servings that are in all the stores now. So one thing people will sometimes tell me is they'll buy the ones that are mostly vegetables and they'll be way too tart for them, or they really don't like those. But if you mix the full vegetable juice just on your own, half and half with orange juice or half with grape juice or something, then it's really good. And so that might be another option if you're choosing some of the very high, some of the green juices or things out there that you could see. You might like them better if you mix them half and half with fruit juice as well.
Yeah, and I know some people are a big fan of, rather than turning to juice every day, getting an orange out and just slicing it up. And,
sure.
Because it's got more fiber.
Right.
And fewer calories.
Right. I mean, it's definitely filling. If you can eat the raw fruit, I'll get this question a lot, should I only eat raw fruit? And I don't think you only have to eat raw fruits and vegetables, but you're exactly right, because, boy, when you get the raw ones, you're getting more fiber generally, and they generally are more satisfying and filling and take longer to eat. So the other issue is, I mean, that's a good and a downside and a positive, and that sometimes people don't eat them because they take longer. But because they take longer, you may feel full faster and be more satisfied because of that as well.
Yeah, it goes back to our callers quitting smoking. Pieces of fruit, mm-hmm. grapes, pieces of orange.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Have those things available in little containers or little baggies, however you can do that to make it easy on yourself. It's almost as if we have to take the next step so that we'll eat well.
Okay. I think, I don't know if caller in Sullivan is with us still or not. Yeah. You want to follow up?
No.
Okay.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
Okay. About protein drinks like shakes, whey protein, is that something that is, you know, good for you if you're working out? Is that something you would recommend if you're working out?
Well, there's definitely been a lot of studies coming out on whey protein and the benefits of whey protein. And so basically what we're looking at, when you're working out, you want to go into a workout well-nourished. And that means maybe you have a snack beforehand or you've had a meal a couple hours beforehand. So you got some nutrients available to train. And after workout, particularly if it's an hour or longer, if it's a heavy lifting workout, some type of strength or power workout, then we do know that within this 30-minute period, you do want to eat and you want to have something with carbs and protein. And so many of the shakes that are available out there, what they've done is they've added either whey protein or soy protein. Usually it's one of the two, or maybe a mix of both of those. There are products that mix them both. They have different amino acid profiles and so on. So that can be a very practical, easy thing to take in after a workout or any of these instant drinks, instant breakfast drinks or things like that, because they're portable. And so from a timing standpoint, you may be more apt to get that in every time after a hard workout if it is something liquid that you can take with you, that you just open it up and you drink it. And so a lot of those are great. Usually what we try to shoot for after a hard workout is at least 40 or 50 grams of carbohydrate and 10 to 20 grams of protein, which is what's in a lot of those things. If you used a scoop of whey protein yourself, most of the scoops that are in those packages are about 20 grams. So maybe even a half a scoop mixed in with some juice is a great recovery beverage too, because you get all the carbs, plus you get the liquid, plus you get the protein. So I think either whey or soy is good, but a lot of the data now coming out, you know, is real looking at whey as being a really great, great way to get that protein afterwards. One caution I would say is there are products out there that are just whey protein, you know, shakes that maybe they have whey protein. They might have some flavoring. They don't have much else in it. And then there are a lot of other ones that have all kinds of extra supplements and other things in them. And so what I'd typically recommend is just the straight whey protein if you're going to add that to something, because there's not a real body of evidence to say we need tons of these other things for recovery, but the protein certainly is helpful along with the carbohydrate.
And you wouldn't recommend that before you workout, just one after?
Well, I think sometimes they can be helpful before if that's your only option. I think, again, if you can get food, boy, get food, because you can get all different nutrients and you don't want to rely too much on these drinks because they're not giving you everything. They're certainly not giving you the phytochemicals from fruits and vegetables,
right,
and so on. But when you're in a pinch, it's better to go into a workout with nutrients in your system, no matter where they come from, than to not go in, you know, with food. So sometimes they can be helpful beforehand as well.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Next, we go to Chicago, a listener on line 4. Hi.
Thank you. Wonderful program, as usual. I have a question about calcium. Is there anything new in terms of the whole matter of the type of calcium, whether it's dairy or supplements that you've heard of that are beneficial for the assimilation of calcium? And should it possibly... noted that it's recommended that you have magnesium with it and vitamin D. Could you comment briefly on that topic?
Well, yeah, I think when we think about calcium, the best way or one of the best ways to get it in is throughout the day in food products, because naturally, for example, if you have a milk product, it's going to have typically some magnesium in it. They're generally vitamin D fortified, and the calcium is there. And so that's would probably be, you know, one of the best ways to get it. And some of the studies, there have been some studies at Purdue and other places where they've looked at comparing different foods and supplements and what's well absorbed. And certainly the dairy products, the calcium in dairy products are well absorbed. The calcium in soy milk or fortified things like that is typically well absorbed too, as is the calcium in a lot of the calcium fortified orange juices and things like that. And so I don't really personally worry as much about the source as trying to help people get enough. Because what we typically find and what comes out in all of our data that comes out through the government is that many people still are under-consuming calcium. And so whether it's from a calcium carbonate or calcium citrate or whatever the source is, most of those or many of those supplements now will have magnesium, as you mentioned. They will have vitamin D, not all of them, but many of them will, and that would be probably the preferable way to take that. Some of them will also have vitamin K because that has a role in bone strength as well. But what is real important to do is to say, gosh, throughout the day, am I getting 3 or 4 really good servings? And the one place that we may not see them be, you know, the calcium be absorbed quite as well, depending upon what else is in that, is things like some of the products like cereals and those kinds of things. Because what I've noticed is some of those products will have 100% iron, plus they might have 50% calcium. But we know that iron and calcium taken together, at least in supplemental form, will tend to decrease the absorption of both of them because they're both big minerals and they kind of fight for absorption at the same time. And so I'm not sure that when you get something that's overly supplemented that it's probably as good as it looks, because it may not be able to – the calcium might not be able to be as well absorbed as we would hope.
Well, thank you. One more comment. I recently noted in an article in this week's trade section of the paper that they've now devised a DNA test that can make a determination of how well certain medications, specifically this blood thinner Coumadin, mm-hmm, and other things, are utilized by the person who may have it recommended for the use of blood clots and a regular heartbeat, that how much should be used, because quite often a blanket amount is given and a person's sensitivity to it and whether it's beneficial or detrimental can have a factor. So there's a new DNA test devised by the American College of Medical Genetics that has made this determination. So there's a test now available for that. And I was wondering if, apart from the allergy test, you know, whether we can determine like what foods are good or may have an allergic response. I know when I eat peanut butter, and it's been noted also by others that you sort of have a runny nose afterward, and certain minor allergic responses. So I thought the way of determining what foods are good is now available for us. I think that should be recommended for people who just indiscriminately say, oh, I'm going to take a lot of vitamins. You know, you can overdo the vitamins. Like this is Dr. Rosen, who has been on the show at university before, said, whereas vitamin C can be an antioxidant, it can also become a pro-oxidant if you take too much.
Mm-hmm, for
so,
sure.
I just thought just knowing how much we should take is an important factor. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. I wonder if in the future we'll see more individually tailored recommendations for nutrients and medications.
Sure. I think definitely. I think there's already a big growing group and body of evidence for, you know, nutrigenomics, they call it, really what's happening. And our National Dietetic Association meeting for dietitians is coming up in a couple weeks in Chicago, and there's a big kind of focus area on nutrition and genetics and nutrigenomics and what's happening. There's a subgroup of our Dietetic Association Nutrition and Complementary Care that has – the dietitians in that group have really been focused on this area. And so I do know personally dietitians who are doing – trying to get more into this whole genetic predisposition with diet, and a few of my colleagues who've gone back for PhDs in genetics and, you know, really feel that this is the way of the future with nutrition. And, of course, there's a lot we don't know yet, but I think that is definitely where things are going. Real, you know, what we're calling personalized nutrition. We do this now as much as we can, but with additional testing and assessment, I think that is going to be very interesting.
Sure is. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. Susan is a sports and wellness nutritionist, and she's the owner of Nutrition on the Move. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois as well. And she joins us once a month. Usually she joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month. And so that's where we are here in October. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a question. We've got about 9-10 minutes left in this portion of the program. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, back to where we started this afternoon. Let's go back to our cancer RD.
Mm-hmm.
Remind us of her name again and her website.
Okay. It's Diana Dyer, D-Y-E-R, and it's cancerrd.com. And one of the neat things about Diana, she's a really neat person overall, but is that she's, you know, always trying to research the new information that's come out. So if you do get on her website and try to keep up with what's happening, like you say, her blog or other things that she's posting there, you can be assured that, number one, it's really good quality information, and secondly, it's current. So there's a lot of good info there. Plus, she's very willing to share what she's done. And, of course, anybody who goes through a medical problem, cancer, heart disease, whatever it might be, may have their things that have worked for them that they've tried to do. But I think she's really great about sharing what she's done, knowing that not everybody's necessarily going to do the same thing, but it really gives an idea of how at least she, on a day-by-day basis, is able to, from a nutrition standpoint, from a relaxation standpoint, exercise, trying to manage the things that we know about with cancer recurrence.
Yeah. And one of the things that she's really high on is the cruciferous vegetables.
She is.
And I know, you know, I can name three right off the top of my head: broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower. But there are so many more. So maybe we'd throw out a few more.
The
cabbages and...
The cabbages are great. And whether that's red cabbage or green cabbage, asparagus, like you say, Brussels sprouts are one that people don't always eat
appreciate.
That much of.
Yeah,
yeah, appreciate, but they are very good. The broccoli sprouts that you can find now, which are good. Now, of course, there's mixes between cauliflower and broccoli and those types of things that are in the stores. And I think that's all really, really helpful. And like you mentioned, kale, too, how that is, you know, any of these dark green leafy vegetables as well are just so good for you. But many people don't eat kale because it might take a long time to cook, or it's... You know,
what do you do with it? Maybe you're not familiar with it.
Right.
You just say, wow, that's a beautiful leaf, but what the heck do I do with it?
That's exactly right. I'm going to try that recipe you talked about on her blog. But, you know, those things are really helpful. But, you know, she tries to eat one serving of cruciferous vegetables every day. So, again, that's broccoli sprouts, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, cabbage, those types of foods, too. And Elizabeth Jeffrey and other folks here on campus have done a lot of studying on broccoli and really found of course, there's just a lot of benefits for prevention with a simple thing as eating broccoli, which many people do like. So I find kids tend to really like broccoli, too, because they're kind of fun looking in these trees. And if you can have them dip the trees in something, then they'll be even more apt to eat them. So
we're going to take a stroll through the forest
yes.
this evening on our dinner plate. Well,
so
let's take another call now. A listener in Urbana, line one. Good afternoon.
Hi, this is Mike.
Hi, Mike.
I'm really enjoying your show on nutrition. I hit 55 this year, and there are times when I just seem to be lacking in energy. And I've seen my doctor and gone through all the tests, and everything seems to be fine. Is there any combination of foods, though, that would stimulate more, you know, energy, like maybe affect the thyroid or something? I know my dad has thyroid problems. Maybe it runs in the family.
Well, I guess when we think about energy, there'd be one thing I would suggest first, because I do have a lot of clients who find that this is beneficial, and that is trying to eat more early in the day, and particularly more protein early in the day. Not that protein is the end-all by any means, but often we will have maybe a small breakfast, might be mostly carbohydrate, a quick bowl of cereal or something like that, but you're doing a lot during the day. And for many people, they might have a small lunch and then eat most of their calories later at night. And so you just don't have the calories when you need them as far as energy goes. So one suggestion I'd make, if you're not already doing it, is maybe really bump up your breakfast. It might be that you have a bowl of cereal, but have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with it, or eat more in the morning. Maybe grab another real big glass of milk or soy milk or something in the morning, or have eggs more often, or these kinds of things where you actually get more substantial breakfast, because that's what's going to carry you through the day. So that might be the first thing to try if you're not doing that. And also try to snack throughout the day if you can with something with protein and a carbohydrate. You know, a simple thing might be just, we've talked about, a handful of almonds, and maybe you have that with a little dried fruit, and you put those in little containers, and you just know by 10 o'clock you're going to have that. And the other thing that often is very helpful is to really make sure you're hydrated. Maybe you are hydrated, but for many people, again, we wake up dehydrated. We don't tend to drink much in the morning. And then you go all day and you're very dehydrated. The body does not function well in a dehydrated state. So, you know, having at the very least a couple 20-ounce, you know, bottles of water or containers of water by the time you get to lunch is really helpful. So those would be things I would suggest doing right away. Now, as far as thyroid function, you know, there aren't particular foods that will necessarily jump the thyroid or make it actually go up. You know, we know that it's affected by iodine and other things, but there's not really a prescriptive measure for diet that's actually going to, you know, affect thyroid positively necessarily.
Yeah. What is it about exercise that once you get moving, your body seems to, you might be really kind of not mm-hmm. feeling like doing it, and then once you're into it, something happens. Is that the endorphin thing?
It is. I mean, your hormones do change once you start exercising, and you get more of these feel-good hormones that come through and help you feel better. And so that's another thing. That's a good point, because that's another thing to think about. If you're not active in the morning, of course, sometimes people aren't active because they don't feel energetic enough, but if you can eat a little bit more for breakfast, get a 10 or 15-minute walk in the morning and see if that does help. I mean, it sounds pretty simple, but for many people, it's almost shifting energy early in the day when they need it, and then eating a little bit less at night can really help.
Hmm. Let's take one last call this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Line 2, Champagne. Go ahead.
Hello. Yeah. My diet counselor has me doing with kale. I have a power juicer, and I put kale, carrot, apples, and lemon juice in the power juicer,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I get, I take my kale. That seems to help me a lot.
That sounds like a great idea, because especially if you get one of, like you say, those power juicers or those real good blenders, and you can put these together and drink that, that's an excellent way to do it, and then it's fresh, too, which is great. So that sounds good. That sounds good to me right now.
Okay. Well, I want to thank everyone who called this afternoon, and I want to thank Susan as well. And we will put a couple of the websites that we talked about today. We'll make links on our webpage
Great.
At will.illinois.edu. And also, Susan brought with her this afternoon some handouts for us on the fast, high-energy smoothies and shakes. So if you'd like a copy of that, drop me a line at the Afternoon Magazine, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801, 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Send us a self-addressed stamped envelope, and we'll get that handout to you. Susan, thank you so much.
Thank
you. Good to see you, as always. And to everyone who called in, our thanks. And to everyone who's listening this afternoon, thank you as well.